So my guest today is Ryan Lee, who is actually an old friend of mine. It's always kind of funny slash interesting when I get to sit down with somebody who I've known for many years and grill them on parts of their life that I actually don't yet know. And that was the case with Ryan. I learned a lot about him. I mean, I've kind of known things. Ryan grew up outside of New York City, started to sort of like gain an entrepreneurial spirit in his early teens. And he shares a story about how he actually had middle-aged men coming to his house to buy things from him when he was 12 and 13 years old. And he built on that and mixed his love of movement and exercise and physiology and service and started out his career actually helping kids who are really struggling with physical limitations and conditions and disease. And that evolved into something he never saw coming, a whole career path that had some really high highs, but also some really low lows, and kind of landed him in what he calls the dark years of his life, which he has been slowly emerging from over the last 5 years. And that's all kind of manifested in a new venture, which is launching actually a new series of nutrition bars called Rewind, which is pretty cool. How we got to that place and how he feels about it and what he's scared about as he does this is all part of the conversation we have today. I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoyed sitting down and learning a lot more about my old friend, Ryan Lee. I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good Life Project is brought to you by Understood Explains, a podcast that's like a beacon for parents navigating the special education system. Hosted by Juliana Urtube, a special education expert, this season is all about individualized education plans, or IEPs. Juliana breaks down complex topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP in a way that's easy to grasp. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains about the difference between IEPs and 504 plans, and I was struck by the balance of empathy and practical advice. It's not just about understanding the system. It's about empowering parents and caregivers to advocate for their children, which is just so important. So I've known a number of people who've had to literally scramble to figure out how to advocate for their kids when the system seemed to just make it so hard to get the support that they need and deserve. So if you're a parent navigating this world or even just wondering if it's right for your family, I encourage you to give Understood Explains a listen. Search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. It's like having a roadmap for a journey you didn't expect, making it a little less daunting. Good Life Project is sponsored by the ADHD Aha podcast hosted by Laura Key. So I've been kind of amazed at how many conversations I've had lately with people later in life who are wondering if they have ADHD. It can be hard to understand what ADHD is by looking at a list of symptoms. So in each episode of ADHD Aha, you'll hear heartfelt interviews about the unexpected, emotional, even funny ways that ADHD symptoms surface for adults. Like the recent episode with ADHD coach Emily Weinberg, which really resonated with me. Her story about how she was thinking she was, quote, just lazy before her diagnosis because she wasn't hyperactive really struck a chord. Her feeling frozen and stuck, ruminating on mounting to-do lists is just so relatable for so many people. It's really validating to hear others articulate those experiences. Each episode of ADHD Aha features candid tales of realizing that you or a loved one has ADHD. You'll hear the unexpected, emotional ways that it manifests in adults through heartfelt interviews. ADHD Aha captures the authentic human experience of ADHD. So if you want a fresh, personal perspective that embraces the messiness, listen to ADHD Aha. Search for ADHD Aha in your podcast app. That's ADHD Aha with Aha spelled A-H-A. It's an aha moment you won't miss.
What kind of kid were you? What were you into?
I was a good kid. I never got into trouble. I listened. It was, you know, growing up when we did, it was different back then. You know, it was, I look back now Maybe that's why I'm building this company, kind of tapping back into the late 70s, early 80s, because I had like this perfect childhood. We moved into a neighborhood when I was 10 years old, and it was a new neighborhood, and there were like 110 houses, and they were all being built as we were moving in. So we were the 10th house. So imagine there are 100 lots of houses being built with dirt, and it was all kids my age. So all we did was, you know, we'd get home from school, I'd leave the house, and I'd play with my friends and ride our bikes and play in mud and dirt until about 5-6 o'clock. And my mom would say, "Ryan," and then you come home.
Right. So it's like the classic sort of like thing that you see on like the old TV shows.
And it was, yeah. And you know, I was pretty relaxed though. I just went with the flow. I loved baseball cards. Started my first business when I was 12. A baseball card. And it's funny because I was
trading.
Oh, I would buy and sell. Yeah. And I even took out ads in magazines, like print, like space ads. For free priceless, and I would type them out on my typewriter. My dad would get them Xeroxed, and I'd mail them out. And it was funny. People would send me cash through the mail. You know, oh, and I would type up a priceless. Oh, I have 1959 Mickey Mantle, very good condition, $20. And they sent me $20. And then we started getting calls because I had my phone number on, our house number. And I remember guys, like adult men, would come to my house. They'd call.
And you're 12 years old.
I was 12. Yeah, between 12 and 13 years. Yeah, it was like 1985. And all the baseball cards in the basement. And my mom would be like, "Ryan, why are you going to the basement with these grown men?" I'm like, "Mom, come on. Like, we're doing baseball cards." But it was the best business model in the world because I would get baseball cards for my birthday and like my bar mitzvah and stuff. And then I'd get them and then I'd sell them for 100% profit. It was pretty nice profit.
It's a good markup
there. Yeah. So it was fun.
It's amazing that before they actually sort of like met you, do people know that they were dealing with a 12, 13-year-old kid?
I don't think so. I don't think they did. Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known, especially when it was through the mail.
Right. There's no internet. There was no email.
No.
There was, like, you couldn't search for a 12-year-old Ryan on Facebook.
It only
didn't exist.
Right. It only had my name on the ad. It had my name and our home address. And
I'm just imagining, like, you know, like some middle-aged dude showing up at your front door and be like, "I'm here to pick up the card from Ryan." Then, like, looking down and see.
I know. Although, see, here's the thing. See, I'm only 5'8", but when I was, like, 13, I was 5'8". I grew. So I was, like, a little. And I was pretty strong even at that age. So I felt good. I felt like I could kind of take an adult or at least scrap if I had to. So I didn't look like a little kiddie. I just haven't grown in 30 years.
That's too funny. So you had like this passion for kind of the hustle, the entrepreneurship from a pretty young age.
I liked it. Yeah.
Was the thing about baseball cards also like, was there a passion for fitness, wellness also? Or was that just kind of like a means
I tried playing baseball when I was a kid, but I was terrible. See, I was not coordinated at all. I was really bad. I remember the first year I played, I struck out like every time. The only thing I did have was my speed. So I was fast. And I started, you know, in elementary school, you race kids. And I was racing everybody and I would win. I'm like, "Oh my God, I think I could do this." And then the sport started happening in, what was it, 8th grade. It was our junior high and I joined the track team. And I was like, "I'm home." Like my first meet I won and I ended up winning, see, Rockland, I'll bring it back to Rockland County. I ended up winning the Rockland County championships for all of junior high for every, you know, 13, 14 year old. And I set a county record. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing. So, and I was working out more and I started lifting weights when I was like 13. So that's how I started getting into the fitness and the training. Then I ran track all through high school and all through college too.
What'd you get to college for?
I got a degree in recreational therapy.
What is that?
Yeah, exactly. It's like play therapy. So I specialized in working with kids. It was the greatest college stuff. So I took like ropes courses. I created ropes courses. I took basic camping. I took a class called New Games. And then I took anatomy and physiology. But I learned a lot about leadership and leading people. I remember being 19 and I was a volunteer Big Brother and I'd run programs and go in with senior citizens. You go into children's hospitals. So you did all that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a really strong service element to what you're doing from a pretty early age.
Yeah.
I'm wondering where that came from.
You know, my parents were always giving, caring people. My mom volunteered. My dad owned a retail store, a yarn store, the Yarn Barn. but he was the most, and he still is the most like outgoing, caring. Whenever people meet him, they just love my dad. He's the friend. People think I'm friendly. I'm an introvert next to my dad. So I just learned that from him. And he always taught me, you know, you've got to take care of your customers. You got to treat them well. They're everything. And he just like, they would come in. They'd be like, "Bruce," because my dad's name is Bruce Lee. And so they'd be like, "Bruce."
The other Bruce Lee.
Yeah, yeah. So I kind of learned it from them. Just, you know, just being a good person, just doing the right thing. And my grandparents, all my grandparents were just nice, simple people. Just, they always treated everyone well.
Yeah. So when you got out of school with that degree, what is that? Where does that send you?
So I worked, my first job was the Children's Rehab Hospital. It was called Blythedale Children's Hospital. It was really interesting because I got my internship there between my junior and senior year.
Right.
And they liked me a lot. So they kept, there was a job that opened up like maybe a month into my senior year. They called me, I said, Ryan, we have a job in our department, except it's adapted aquatics. Do you want the job? I said, but I don't graduate for a year. They said, we'll hold it for you. I said, but I'm not a good swimmer. That was the one, I was never a good swimmer. And they said, that's okay, just take a lifeguard class. I'm like, what are you talking? So my assistant track coach in college taught the lifeguarding. So I ended up becoming a certified lifeguard to learn how to do this. And they held the job for me the entire year. So the first couple of years, I spent most of the time in the pool with the kids, just kind of learning as I was going. But so I'd spend an hour or two in the pool with the kids, and then I was doing sports and fitness. And it was a great job because we ran the whole hospital at night. So all the physical therapists, the occupational therapists, they'd all leave. Inpatient hospital. And we would have, I'd work from two.
It was inpatient. So the kids were actually living there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they all live there. Oh, it's the greatest place in the world.
Tell me about the kids. What types of kids you were working with?
It's mostly a physical rehab. So a lot, I would say 85% of the kids are in wheelchairs. A lot of kids post-surgery, spina bifida, cerebral palsy, spinal cord injuries. We even had some kids like with diabetes that needed inpatient, you know, really advanced care. But it was physical rehab. But yeah, everything.
Yeah. When you said yes to that as sort of like going into the beginning of your senior year in college, did you really understand what you would be doing and who you would be working with? Like, was it crystal clear to you?
Yeah, because I had spent the whole summer with them the year before.
Okay.
I knew exactly. And I'm like, this is my job. Like, this is going to be my career forever. And I ended up staying there for 6 years.
Yeah.
That was my full-time gig for 6 years. And it was amazing.
During that window of time, were there any moments or any sort of like experiences that really stood out as moving you deeply or defining sort of like who you are and the way you saw the world?
Man. Yeah. I'm going to get emotional. You know, I remember there was one girl, Adriana, and it was during my internship. And I remember we'd work from 2 to 10 a night, and one of my favorite things was going around to every kid's room and every bed and saying goodnight to them. I just loved that. I still love doing it with my kids, like tucking them in. And she had this thing, this disease called scleroderma, which is this, I'd never heard of it. It's basically the hardening of your art, like everything in your body hardened, your arteries, your skin. And it was, I just remember one night walking through, and she was the sweetest girl. She was like 15 years old, and her just like screaming in pain. Just so, just like, it just tore me up. And that was hard. So I knew a lot of kids that passed away over the years. It was always hard, but what it did, and even to this day, I never get too stressed about things. Even when like my whole life started falling apart, I'm like, I still have it pretty good. I still have my health, and now my wife and my kids are all happy and healthy. Everything's good. Even when we had our first child, or my second, my third, my fourth child, everyone's like, do you want a boy? Do you want a girl? I said, I truly just want a healthy baby. That was it. And it really, they're like, no, do you? I'm like, I'm serious. Like, that's it. Just healthy baby. A kid that could even walk. I was so used to kids in wheelchairs. That's all I saw, kids in wheelchairs. For years and years and years. So it was odd. Even when I'd leave the hospital, I'd go to a park and you'd see kids running around. It just felt foreign to me. I'd be in the gym and there'd be 30 kids and 22 would be in wheelchairs, 2 would be in stretchers, 1's blind. And they'd be like, okay, Ryan, here's a basketball. Go do an activity for an hour. And you learn how to get creative. Yeah. You know, it just really made me appreciate life.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it gives you perspective on what the big things really are and what the little things really are at an unusually young age. Yeah. I think a lot of people don't ever get that, let alone have that in their, I'm guessing this was like early to mid 20s for you.
Yeah. I did the internship there when I was 20 and started working there when I was 21. Yeah. So that was like really formative for me. And that's why I try not to complain about things because, you know, everything's firmly in perspective and it has been for a long time.
Yeah. So I don't know if this is a legit quote or not, but I often reflect on a quote that it's attributed to Einstein, which is something like, there are only two ways to see the world. One, everything is a miracle, or two, nothing is a miracle. It's kind of like that. If you can wear that lens, and I'm not saying that it's easy.
Yeah.
And life throws a lot of stuff at you as you move through it. But just to have, like, to see and experience what you experienced at a fairly young age, and to be in service of these kids, knowing that every day you walk in, you show up, and you're generally making a meaningful difference in their lives, and also knowing that many of them have conditions where at some point they're going to leave.
Yeah.
Either leave the hospital or leave the planet.
Right, right. And a lot of them, most of the kids were inner city kids. So they came from really tough environments too, and the background. So they had so many strikes against them. So yeah, it was hard, but it was always a spirit of them getting better. And, you know, I know this is going to sound cheesy and like some motivational poster, but it was really amazing how brave these kids were. Like, a kid with cerebral palsy who'll be there. And this could be like their 19th surgery, and they're like 14 years old. And they're like, they come in with casts again, and they're in casts for like 7 months. You know, with us, I remember I broke my finger like 2 years ago and had a little splint, and it was annoying, but I couldn't even imagine like what these kids have gone through.
Nah.
And they go through physical therapy for hours and hours every day and just not complain. They're just moving forward.
What, after 6 years, what was it that led you to move on from there?
So I started, I was there from 94 to 2000. And at the end of 98, early 99, I was doing a lot of part-time personal training in the extra hour I had a day. And I put myself through graduate school. I got a master's in exercise physiology. So I started getting really serious about the fitness stuff. And then I had a website built for me at the end of 99 about sports training, because that's what I was doing. I was training young athletes. And it started growing and growing. This was before Facebook and YouTube and all that stuff. So all you had to do was write a couple articles, and you're at the top of the search engines, Hotbot and all that stuff. And I got the attention of a big sports company. They offered to buy me. I'm like, really? So I'm like, yes. But don't get too excited, because they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you a check for $500. Not $500, $500. But we're going to give you all these stock options, because this was right as the dot-com boom. Everything was and they're like, you know, in 2 years, you're going to be a millionaire. And we'll give you like $65,000. That was like more than I was making 26 grand at the hospital. So it was a huge raise. I could have my own space. They were based, and I took it. I said, let me try this new chapter. Let me try something different. And after 2 months, the whole bust, like everything collapsed, the whole dot-com. And they said, sorry, we're letting you go. I'm like, what do you mean? I just left my job. Like, what? So I had to struggle really fast and get another job. And I got one at a big internet company in New York City. So I was living in Stamford, Connecticut at the time.
Did you have any thoughts of going back to the job that you had,
though? I actually did. I emailed that. I was messaging them a call, but they didn't have any. They filled my spot.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I'll create a job. I'll do anything. But also, you know, I went from 26 grand to like 65, and then I was going to have to go back to 30. But so I was kind of struggling a little bit. And it took me about a month to find this new job at an internet company. It was awful. I had to commute into the city every day on the train. And you know me well. And it was right by Grand Central. It was in a little cubicle. And I'll never forget when they interviewed me. She's like, oh, do you know, this is for an editing position. Do you know HTML? I'm like, sure. I don't freaking know HTML. I got through with my personality. And she's like, oh my God, you're going to be great. And after like a couple of days, she's like, I thought you said you know HTML. I'm like, oh yeah, you know. I was just trying to like distract her. So it was just a matter of time until I was gone. We did not get along well. So after 6 months, they let me go. And then I'm like, I need another job. So then I was looking online, and I'll never forget. I saw an ad. It said, any runners who want to teach. I'm like, well, I was a runner and I like working with kids. So it was an alternative high school in the South Bronx in Hunts Point. And they said, we're starting up a new health and phys ed program.
What does that mean, alternative high school?
It was a high school for kids who couldn't hack it in the regular schools. It wasn't a public school, so they could make their own hours. They could do their own thing. So it was all kids who, most of them had been arrested and in trouble with the law.
When was this around?
So this was 2000, and I left the job in 2000. I did that other stuff. So this was 2001. This was like June 2001.
Yeah. So the South Bronx was still a pretty interesting place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Then.
Yeah. It was.
This was like on the tail end of when, I mean, sort of like the crack epidemic really decimated a lot of the South Bronx.
Yeah. And we were in Hunts Point. So we're in the thick of it.
Yeah.
Like, and yeah, we were right in the middle. I mean, you go out, I had an old beat up car, and they kept stealing. They would steal my little blinker lights. They'd steal my side view mirrors. And I went to the police station the first time. I said, what's, you know? They're like, oh, we know who it is. It's this guy. He's a crackhead, and he's just going to keep stealing them. And I used to have to buy it back from the guys who'd steal it. So I would drive, and the guys had these little garages right off the Bruckner. And they go, yo, come here. And I drive over. They're like, yo, you're missing the lights.
Right.
And I go, all right. And I swear, people think I make this up, Jonathan. He'd come out with a garbage bag, and he'd go, all right, that's a, you know, 85, blah, blah, blah. Here you go. It's $20. And I'd buy him back. But they kept stealing my side view mirrors so many times, and it kept getting expensive. So the one guy goes, all right, here's what I'm going to do. Just sit in your chair. And he got a big mirror out, and he cut it around the thing. He glued it onto my side. I'm like, well, what if someone else drives my car? You can't move it now. He goes, well, no one else is going to drive your car now. This is yours. So that was my experience. So I was in the South Bronx for about a year.
What were you doing there?
So I started up their whole gym health and phys ed, and I wasn't even a teacher. I just created a curriculum. I did really cool things. I got to do whatever I want. I did a recreation class, and we took them here right in Midtown Manhattan and took them indoor rock climbing. Mm. I taught them football, health, anatomy. It was a lot of fun. But that's when on the side, and I started seeing like the director of the school was, I don't want to talk bad about people. He was awful. awful. Just terrible leadership. It was a rough place to work. And I love some of my fellow teachers. I'm still friends with some of them to this day, but it was just not a really good environment. I said, I need to kind of figure out what my next move is. And that's when I got real. I was always doing the internet on the side at this point. After that big site collapse, they gave me back my company. So I was kind of messing around. I'd make $1,000 here, $500 there.
What were you doing? Like, how were you actually making money?
I was selling training equipment. I was selling training programs. I would hire someone. They'd pay me $99 and I'd pay him $30 and he'd create a training program for them.
It's almost just, like you're like the evolution of the baseball card thing.
Right. It was like this kind of weird.
It's like arbitrage.
Yeah. I was just kind of playing around. And then I started learning about recurring revenue, which is like my favorite thing. And I took all this content I'd been writing, all these articles, and I said, let me really get serious and let me make it a paid membership site. So I put it behind a paywall. And it was, and people think I make this, it's unreal how weird this is. I remember driving into the Bronx, perfect morning. And I was going to go live that day. Everything was free. And that day, I kept teasing my list. I said, we're going to launch it. Paid membership site. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. That day was September 11th, 2001. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously the whole world stopped. I know you have obviously a story with what happened, what you were doing with your life at that point. So I put obviously everything on hold for a while. So I ended up launching it a couple weeks later. And right off the bat, it was like a big success, this membership site. It was sports. It was all for strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, athletes. And it was like $50 a year and we got a lot of members and it kept going and going and going. And I told my wife, and I always want to be really conservative, and because we didn't have any kids at the time. I said, if I could do this for 6 months, consecutive income, then I want to do this full time. And she said, all right, let's do it. And 6 months and the income kept growing and growing until it was more than what I was making as a gym teacher. And then I left, and this was about June of 2002, I think. Yeah, June 2002, I left that job and I've been full time on my own ever since. And now here I am. The Good Life Project.
Yeah, it's been a little more that's happened between then and now.
Yeah. So the 16 years.
It's interesting because when I first sort of like heard, like the name Ryan Lee, it was in association with this world of the internet and internet marketing and quote recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. And I then and to this day have a really mixed association with that world, even though I play in that same space to a certain extent myself. And I think it's funny because I was reflecting on this recently. I have this recollection of actually sort of keeping that entire community at arm's length, including you, just because I had this association. And I remember when I first met you, I'm like, huh, this guy has a different heart, a different set of intentions. And it was interesting for me to sort of try and reconcile what I knew about this world and who this person is. And I'm curious for you on a personal level, because then you went on to build, like membership site after membership site and develop this really big reputation as a quote, thought leader slash guru. And in this space, coming out of a world where you spent 6 years just serving kids who were like fiercely in need, and then working in alternative high school in the South Bronx, and then to be in this world, did you have any sort of like internal struggle or conversation about balancing these sort of like two sides of you?
You know, it was a very slow road.
Yeah.
Like, because I started, so the first few years, first 3-4 years, which I was only in the health and fitness industry. So I felt like I was still serving people. I was doing training articles and fitness programs and helping people live a better life and helping strength coaches. And they were helping kids. And I was going to strength and conditioning facilities and talking to doctors about fitness, like all this cool stuff. So that was from like 2002 to 2006 and 2007. And then it started to change with one event. I was asked to speak. So the internet marketers, you know, this whole world, they started to take notice of me. They're like, look at this guy doing this in the fitness industry. He's doing some really cool things. And then they asked me to, my friend Yannick Silver, who I'd met through this whole internet. So he asked me to speak at one of his events. And I got on stage And I guess no one had really talked about this stuff, like membership sites or this high-level strategy stuff, and people were just blown away. And that's when things started changing. I'm like, maybe I could teach people how to do this more. And you start getting into it, and you start getting seduced by the numbers a little bit. You start getting, you know, marketing starts to become a game, and you start to lose sight a little bit about the people you're helping. And I definitely started going down that road. And it all came to a head later, a few years later. And I'll never forget, I'm not going to say this person's name, but I'd speak at a lot of events and I would do the same shtick, right? You get up there, you do your 1 hour talk, your kind of fluffy talk, and then you lead up to your big pitch and your big sell. And I was about to get on stage, probably 500 people there, and the producer of the event comes up to me right before. And I love speaking, you know me, John, I love speaking, I'm all ramped up. And I'm like excited, I'm sweating already getting on the stage. And he goes, all right, Ryan, you got one job and one job only. And I thought he's going to say to me, rock the stage, whatever. And he goes, you have one job, extract as much money from everyone as possible. In those exact words. And I don't know why. I don't know what it was about that phrase, extract as much money. But it was like, that was like the beginning of the turn. I'm like, I remember physically like kind of taking my breath. I thought he was kidding. I was waiting for him to smile and he wasn't. And then I'm like, this is really starting to feel wrong. And that's when I'm like, I was veering slow. I didn't see myself kind of going off the path. And that was like the moment, like, all right, I am really heading in the wrong direction. And that's when things started to kind of change for me. And that was probably one of the last times I sold from stage. And I've had events. I've been now, if I do any speaking for the past 6 years, I never sell from stage. I never go to events that pitch or anything like that. And it started to get, I'm like, it had only been 6 years, 7 years before that I was working in a children's hospital. I mean, talk about one end of the spectrum, from working in a children's hospital to being on stage trying to extract money from people. I just got off my mission. You're right. And I use those words all the time, to serve people. And I wasn't serving. I was serving myself. And I felt like crap.
Yeah. So what do you do from there? I mean, because at this point also, you're married. Did you have kids by then also?
Yeah, we had, at that point, we had three and our fourth was on the way.
Okay. So you're married. You have three kids, a fourth on the way.
Yeah. Living in New Canaan, Connecticut.
Right. So you've now built a lifestyle around the assumption that this is what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. This is how we're going to sort of like succeed and take care of the family also.
Yeah.
And it's always interesting to me because I think when you have an awakening like that and you're younger and you have people relying on you, and it's much easier to just blow things up.
Right.
Because who cares? Mm-hmm. You know, I'll start over. I'll go make like a little bit of money and live in a studio apartment. Right. But when you're I'm always fascinated because when somebody is at a point in their life where they've actually built, they've got a family, they've got promises they've made, responsibilities, people are looking for them to stability. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of awaken to the fact that the direction I've been going in is not the direction I want to continue going in. How do you honor a changing course while at the same time honoring the sort of sense of commitment that you feel like you've made to your family?
You know, I don't know how I did it. You know, looking back, I felt like for 5 years I was treading water, you know, like that kind of balancing act in between things. And I was balancing doing a product, and I would start getting away from it. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't sell these products. I can't create this stuff anymore. And I'd feel like a financial crunch, and I would go back to what's comfortable. Oh, let me create, you know, some product. I call it one like commission repo or some crap, right? And it was painful when I had to do that, because even though I knew they were still good products and I felt like it was still helping people, it wasn't what I wanted to do. So it was tough. I had two nutrition companies that I had started like a year before that. So they had started to grow and grow and grow. So luckily it was taking a little bit of the financial pressure off of me. It wasn't so stressful where all of my income was done, but it was like a slow transition and a lot of start and stops, a lot of, let me go in this direction. No, it doesn't work. Let me go in this direction. No. And people were like, my God, what are you, like, they must have thought I was out of my mind, because every day, like, I was doing something else and shifting. And looking back, I don't know how anyone even stuck with me, because I don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, it's funny, because I look at that process now, and what you just described to me is actually probably much more deliberate than you even realized when you were in it. And it's basically, it's saying, okay, so I know this isn't what I want to keep doing. I'm not entirely sure what the direction is from here. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I know I kind of want to make sure I'm okay, and like the people that are looking to me are okay. So I'm going to keep trying different things. I'm going to keep testing different things to see if I can find the new sweet spot.
right. between where I can earn a sustainable living and what genuinely feels aligned with who I am and what I really care about. And sometimes yeah. that means balancing like running 10, 15, 20 different experiments. So from right. the outside in, it can look as if this person is just going in a million different directions. Yeah. But if there's some intention, if there's like a bit of deliberate process around yeah. it, it can actually be, and you kind of iterate through it relatively quickly.
Very quick.
It can be, you know, it can be really effective.
You're right. That's why I love talking to you, because you're able to get inside like my head and verbalize it. But that's exactly what it was. I would test fast. I would lead with my heart, right? I'd be like, what is it I want to do? What do I want to try? And then I would try it fast and I would never get emotionally attached to it. And if it didn't work, I cut it and do the next thing. And some things were in the health space. Some things were in the business and marketing space. They tended to be more in the internet marketing space because that's where I had grown this reputation. And you know, it was easier to make money, especially back then in that day. And
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Good Life Project is sponsored by Lexus GX. So have you ever owned something that inspired you to just up your game? For me, it was this high-end mountain bike. I love the ultralight frame, the suspension, the precision gearing, and I realized it deserved to be ridden to its full potential. So I started training harder so I could experience the joy it could give back to me. And it paid off. That bike helped me discover just new levels of performance and straight up joy. When we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. The all-new Lexus GX has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Imagine tackling rugged landscapes with the available 33-inch all-terrain tires and multi-terrain select, then unwinding with the available front row massaging seats. This is a vehicle that inspires you to go further, to live up to its full potential. So why settle? Live up to the all-new Lexus GX. Luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer.
You mentioned also you started building these other nutrition companies on mm-hmm. the side, which eventually yeah. became pretty substantial companies.
Right, right. They, yeah, at the height, they were like really cranking. It started with my idea, my name, you know, the brand, but my head wasn't in the right space, and it wasn't fair to my partners because I was off doing 100 different things. Because, you know, building a company like that takes time. It's not like a digital product where you could launch it and you could be profitable in like 5 minutes. When you have millions of dollars of inventory and overhead and staff, it can take months or years. So I was trying to balance that. I was trying to start and stop new things. So I wasn't really giving that my full attention, but it did it because I had a really good network of fitness professionals. They were all promoting it. Every big kind of fitness marketer, we were their back end. So we had some really good years. And then we started another company that took off, another health company, a nutrition product. But we've closed them or sold them over the past like 2 years.
So, I mean, it's interesting because it's like you come back again to the same place.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, I keep succeeding at different things. I keep succeeding at bigger things. Mm-hmm. And yet these things eventually contract on their own. And then the reality is the way you describe the way you feel about them from the beginning is
And probably in no small part, you know, like that was also connected to you just really not, like this not being a really well aligned expression of who you are and what you care about, which, I mean, it's so, I mean, you've worked with now thousands of people in business, coaching them and helping them. And, you know, I've worked with a lot of entrepreneurs as well. It's so interesting to me that to see that when there is a misalignment and sort of like the essence of who you are as a person and what you want to put into the world and the business that you either build or the career that you have, whatever it may be, that that friction never goes away until in some way, shape or form, everything kind of implodes.
Yeah.
Or there's a really disruptive change that's forced.
No, you're right. It just never lasts. It does. It just doesn't sustain. And it, even though when I started it, because now, you know, now that you're saying this, even when I look back at the first supplement company I started, I didn't start it with the idea that, oh, I want to create these supplements because that's what I created because I knew there was an opportunity. I had all these health and fitness professionals that followed me. Every nutrition company was asking me to promote them because I had a good list. But most of the products were either garbage or it was just a lot of network marketing opportunity. I didn't want to do that. So I'm like, why don't I just create my own company? And that was why it was basically to serve a need, but it wasn't, I didn't wake up in the morning and go, that's it. This is what I'm meant to do, right? Nah. I didn't have like that feel of I'm ready to just go with it. I hadn't had that feeling since I worked at the hospital, you know, like where I would wake up, like couldn't wait to go see the kids and just be with them and play all day and create games and do capture the flag at night when everyone left. And I would run around at night in the hospital with the kids with flashlights and walkie talkies. And just, I mean, that was like, it was like heaven.
Yeah. Were you aware of the sense that that was heaven and you were missing it deeply in what you were doing?
There were days. Yeah. There were days when it could even be as simple as like, I go to a restaurant and you'd look at the person behind, you know, at like the IHOP, right? Like just making pancakes, smiling. And I'm like, this would be kind of nice to just not have the pressure and the, you know, just the person likes what they're doing. They're kind of, you know, it's just, yeah, there were definitely days. And going back and looking, even now when I see a kid in a wheelchair, it just kind of brings back that I really do miss it. There are days that I do miss it. It's funny, about 2 years ago, I did a mastermind because I'm still in touch with a bunch of people that work at the hospital. And after the mastermind, I said, so her name's Debbie. I said, Debbie, I want to bring these 6 or 7 people to the hospital. And then could we throw a party for the kids? And we did. And I took them all to the children's hospital. I brought pizza and I had a DJ and we had a party for the kids. And one kid who he used to be, he was like 15 when I used to work there. And he heard I was coming and he came to visit me at that night. And I hadn't seen him. I haven't seen him in 20, and he's like 40 years old now.
Wow.
And he's married and has 2 kids. It was just unreal. It felt like I was home. So I'm trying to find ways to kind of reconnect with that.
Yeah. Feel like you're home again.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Yeah. So when those nutrition companies start to go south, it kind of delivers you into a window of your life where it's almost like a dark period where a lot of things start to...
Everything collapsed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I call it like my dark years. Right. Within a few years, both the supplement companies collapsed. My internet marketing company started falling apart. And then my mom passed away from lung cancer. And then I was traveling a lot and I started drinking a lot just to escape. I would only drink when I would go. I would look forward to like an event in Vegas. Like, oh, I can go in early and I'll get hammered. And I did at least three or four events. I remember where the night before I was out to like 3 o'clock in the morning and it's the next day I was so hungover. And I look at pictures of when I spoke at those events and I look like I was bloated and I was a mess. And I'm embarrassed now about how I was. So it was just these dark years. And even if I look back at emails I wrote back then, I was cursing a lot and I was so aggressive and I was angry at everybody. And I was angry at, I had clients who I started coaching. They had nothing when I started. And they were doing like, you know, 7-8 figure businesses. And here I was struggling. And, you know, I was like getting jealous. It was really, really tough. Then I was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder, psoriatic arthritis. And I know it was definitely caused by the stress and the nutrition. And then it all took its toll and, you know, started having issues with my wife and I wasn't seeing my kids a lot. It was all falling apart. It was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where do you go from there?
I said, you know what? I need to like see someone because I was always just going to always, you know, I'll gut it out. I'm tough. I always get back. That was my thing. I'll always get back up. So I started going to a psychologist like once a week just to kind of talk through things and started to realize that, all right, I got like a lot of stuff to work through. And I did. And it's been a process. But the first thing I did, I knew the big issue for me and for a lot of people is environment. So the very first thing I did, I told my wife, I told her, I'm not traveling anymore. That's it. I'm not going because when I go and if I drink and I go to these and that's it. And for like 5.5 years, I didn't travel once to speak or do anything at an event. I just focused on my family. I focused on my health, on restoring my health and reducing stress, on eliminating businesses that were just draining me that I wasn't really enjoying and trying to focus and trying to find that one business that'll light me up again that could not only bring revenue, but something that's back aligned with what it is I want to do. And it's been a process. And it's taken me a few years to battle back.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of it was about, I mean, changing environment, but also simplifying.
Yeah.
And also being vulnerable and seeking help, seeking mm-hmm. other people's help. I mean, I know part of this in the middle of all of this, you shared that your mom passed from cancer and it sounds like you were really close to both parents and yeah. they would have been people that you would have turned to
yeah.
when you're going through really troubling stuff. Were they aware of what you were kind of going through at that time?
I don't know. I think I hid it pretty well. I don't think they knew. My dad, I still do. I mean, we talk every single day. So he knew financially, you know, we were having some issues, especially with the nutrition company and things were just not clicking like they used to. So he knew that, but he didn't know all the other stuff and all the stuff I was going through. So they didn't really know. I tried to put on a good face, but only really my wife knew really what I was going through.
Yeah.
But my mom passing away, because she was diagnosed with cancer in December, and then she passed away. This was diagnosed in 2009, and she passed away like 3 months later. And it was just devastating, because I was so close to my mom. I was definitely, you asked me how I was as a kid, I was a mama's boy, 100% mama's boy. So it was really tough, especially because I had 4 kids, and her whole life is just family. That's it. If you could define my mom with one word, family. Family, everything. You know, people say, oh, you know, there's God and then family. My mom's like, nope, family first. So what killed me is that, you know, she couldn't be with my kids anymore. You know, that was her life. So it was hard. It still is hard. You know, it gets easier as the days go by. I don't cry every day like I used to, you know, for a long time, but I miss her.
No,
it's hard.
When you went through this sort of like this window with your wife, because I got to imagine this affects your relationship with your wife as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
In pretty major ways. It had to have been hard for both of you.
It was. Yeah. It was hard. Yeah. I mean, it takes its toll. You know, relationships are hard enough, you know, and then add in financial pressure and add in, you know, the stress and the traveling and the drink. It was not good.
Yeah.
But we've been together for a long time. We met in college. We started dating our senior year in college. So we've been together like a long time. We've been through a lot together. She actually lost her father a couple of years ago from a brain tumor as well. So we're there for each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned that at some point. You get to a point where probably, in no small part due to the way you were living your lifestyle, you end up with an autoimmune conditions. Because I know you now and I know you're active. I know that you don't, all the symptoms that I remember a chunk of years back, you sharing with me, that I had no idea you were dealing with until we sat down. I remember I came out to Connecticut one day, we were sitting in a cafe and you're like, this has been going on with me. I'm like, I had no idea.
Yeah.
And as you sit here with me today, those symptoms are gone.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened?
So what happened was I remember I was playing tennis and my feet were killing me. I'm like, what is going on? I went to every doctor you could imagine. I went to a physical therapist. I went to every doctor. No one could figure out what was going on. Finally went to a rheumatologist and they looked at me immediately and he said, autoimmune, it's psoriatic arthritis.
So what does that actually mean?
So basically it's saying I have psoriasis, but it's not the physical, you would never know. You can't even see it, but it manifests as arthritis. It was like basically attacking my joints. It's inflammation. So this doctor said, well, the only way to cure it is to give you methotrexate, which is chemo. I'm like, well, that sounds kind of extreme.
Like for life or just for?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. He's like, well, we'll do it for 6 months and then we'll check. I'm like, well, isn't that like bad? Like, he's like, well, just make sure you're not around people who like get sick. I said, doc, I have four kids. Someone always has a cold. Like, there's always something. He's like, well, just we'll come in every week. We'll check your blood. I'm like, well, isn't there any other thing? He's like, no, we don't know what caused it. We just have to basically kill all the different cells. I'm like, all right, that doesn't sound good. Let me see what other options. He goes, all right, look, other options, then come back. So I just went on a mission to like figure out what was going on and started learning more about autoimmune, and it was inflammation and diet and stress and exercise and all these things. And I just went to Simplify. I said, that's it. I have to figure out what's going on. And it was so bad. I remember one night, my wife and I, we go out date night every week in a restaurant, and there was a spot like a block away. I'm like, I can't park there. I can't even walk a block. It hurt that much. Wow. It was that painful. I couldn't snap my, like now, it sounds weird that I'm so excited. I couldn't snap my fingers. It hurt that much. My hands, my feet were killing me and I was exhausted. I would take 2 hour naps in the middle of the day. And now I am, you never want to say cure, but I've reversed it. Like I don't have any symptoms at all. I was at the track the other day, sprinting again. I'm down 30 something pounds. I'm back wearing the same pant size I wore in high school. Just simple things.
Like what?
Because
when you go from a doctor basically saying you need to take chemo level medication and nobody should be around you if they're sick for potentially for life, to saying, I'm down 30 pounds. I was at the track. Everything feels great. And it was really simple.
You know, a lot of it, I think, has to do with gut health. Right? And staying away from inflammatory foods. Not that I don't have them. I just don't have them as much anymore. I would have a typical crappy diet. I mean, I was eating sandwiches every day for lunch, you know, the big ones, gluten, dairy, and sugar. But I've cut them down tremendously. Every day I do a 20-minute workout. That's it. Just a 20-minute workout where it's a combination walking on the treadmill. So low impact stuff at a high incline, and then jumping off every 2 minutes and doing some body weight stuff, push-ups, pull-ups, abdominal core exercises. And that's it. I do it 20 minutes a day.
And changing nutrition sounds like it was also at the center of it.
The nutrition was the biggie because you can't out exercise a bad diet. So the nutrition was the biggie. And I needed to start something simple. And that was like, I needed to simplify. I needed to change everything.
How long was it until you actually started to notice that your changes in lifestyle were actually affecting your autoimmune symptoms?
Almost immediately. So there was like two phases of autoimmune. So the autoimmune, when I was first diagnosed a few years ago, I immediately cut out all sugar, all wheat, all gluten, all sugar, all dairy, everything. And I started feeling better in like a week right away. But the problem was, like every diet, right? It was so restrictive.
Right.
You know, no gluten, no dairy, no sugar. I couldn't eat anything. I know you're pretty much living like that, but it's really hard.
It is. And also, I mean, like 4 or 5 years ago, just in that window of time, it's gotten way easier.
Oh, my God.
Because people have become so much more sensitized to the importance of clean food and whole food. But even 5 years ago, it was much very different.
Much different. So it was really hard to stick with it. So I started slowly introducing it back, but I didn't have a system. And the weight started coming back and the symptoms started coming back till about, it was a little over a year ago. We went on a vacation. I took my family to Florida. I'll never forget this. You have one of these moments. I remember wearing a pair of jeans to Florida. It was February, so it was freezing in Connecticut. And then we go to Florida. We have our vacation. You know, I'm eating like a pig. I come back, and as I'm going to put my pants on in Florida to get back on the plane, my jeans didn't fit anymore. I'm saying to my wife, what'd you do to the pants? She's like, what do you mean? I said, did you wash them? She's like, no, I didn't wash your pants. Like, what are you talking about? I came home, and I had a bad – my head was killing me. I went to the doctor. Another sinus infection. It was like all this stuff was happening. And the doctor weighed me and took – and I was almost 200 pounds. I'm only 5'8". I was borderline pre-hypertensive, and that scared the heck out of me. I'm like – and it was that day. I'm like, that's it. You know, my symptoms were starting to come back. My weight was going up. My health was deteriorating quickly. Even though my business was starting to get better, this – I'm like, I need to change this. And that was the day. I'm like, that was it. And from that day, the weight just started coming off, and I started getting back my health. Like just – having a system. To me, it started, I always had said this thing called win the morning. Like you got to win the morning. And I wasn't winning the morning. Every morning for me would be different. One day it would be if we had a leftover donut, or one day I wouldn't eat. Then I tried intermittent fasting. And all I did was freaking think about food all day. Like, I don't know how people do that. All I did was think about food.
It's kind of funny. I think I've done intermittent fasting and actual fast. I think like longer term true fasting is actually easier because your body just adjusts to it. And then you're kind of like, yeah. Okay.
I mean, I would wake, all I do is I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, all right, it's 11:52. I got right. Like 8 minutes till I could eat. And then I'd shove my face, you know, food in my face. I'm like, that's not working. So I'm like, it doesn't make sense. So I started, I'm like, let me just have something simple and healthy in the morning. So I started with a nutrition bar. I couldn't find a good bar. So that's where this idea of this new health company I was creating. But that was, I'm like, let me at least win the morning. And let me try salad for lunch. And I started experimenting with different salads. I'm like obsessed with salads now. And then just trying to have something good for dinner.
It's so interesting too, because you're... Here's a guy who has spent now decades involved in the health, fitness, wellness, nutrition world.
Yeah.
You know, you have access to essentially so many of the top doctors
and healthcare providers,
anyone you want.
Any professional strength coach. I know. They're all on my phone.
Yeah. Right. And yet the way that you needed to find the thing that works for you was essentially to just start to run your own experiments and to like figure out, okay, so in theory, all of these things work in a laboratory.
Right.
Right. But for you to live your life and be able to have something where, you know, I can sustain this approach to the way that I fuel my body and move my body and build my living relationships. I can sustain that for life.
Right.
You have to make some more real world decisions and at the same time sort of figure out, okay, so what's going to work for my body, for my life, and what can I sustain for a really long time? I think that's where so many people go wrong with their lifestyle changes is they look at like a standard universal approach, which is like, okay, so this approach, you know, like in university studies, you know, shows that 80% of the people in it have a dramatic reduction in symptoms, which can be true. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's good science.
Right.
And at the same time, when they're no longer in, you know, a controlled environment, a controlled study, knowing they're going to be held accountable, you know, to investigators on a weekly basis, and they have to go back into their lives, you know, like that protocol is just not sustainable for a long period of time. And they start to revert. I mean, even people who have had heart attacks and go through cardiac rehab, very often 6 months to a year down the road have reverted to the same behaviors, even knowing what they've been through. And it's really, you know, I think like the message with that is it's so important to really, yes, inform yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, go out and do the research, talk to really smart people. And then you've really just got to run the experiments to understand what will work for you on an individual level that you can sustain.
Exactly. And that's a big thing. Like it's got to work for you. And I'll tell people, like if you're doing intermittent fasting and you've been doing it for a long time and you love it and that's like your favorite thing and it works for you, great, then do it. Like if it's working for you and you're healthy and everything's great and you can do it for a lifetime, that's awesome. I know just about every diet, what they do is, you know, you'll turn the book and by page 15 or 16, here it comes. The list of forbidden foods or foods you can't eat, like no, and they list all these and you're like, what? I can never have a cookie again for the rest of my life. And now all of a sudden, every time you see a cookie, that's all you want. So you got to experiment and play and see what works for you and what feels right. And I just knew for me, everything, getting back my health, my relationship with my wife, with my kids, my business, nutrition, exercise, everything always comes down to one word for me. It's simple. It's trying to simplify as much as I can and not overanalyze, even with, I mean, you could take anything. You could name any fruit or vegetable, Jonathan. Name anything.
Cucumber.
Okay. And you know there's going to be people. So you could say, okay, you can add a cucumber to the water and it's great and it tastes great. And there's going to be 100 people who say, well, no, you should add a lemon because it has more acidity, blah, blah, blah. It's going to stimulate that. No matter what, you could pick a harmless thing. Like, there's always going to be someone to find. So I'm like, you know what? If you're having good fruits and vegetables, eat as much as you want. Go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Simple.
So over the last couple of years, you've reclaimed your health. You've reclaimed your relationship. Much more present. Like, you've cut your travel down to almost nothing. Much more present as a father.
Right.
You were telling me recently that, where you are, there's literally a nature preserve behind your house. And you're out there walking with your kids on a regular basis and playing with them, which is, I think, the dream for a lot of people. And the way your brain works is, I mean, it's interesting to see you iterate through different businesses and different go through windows of like being really high and being really low.
Oh, yeah.
And you and I think are wired similarly in that we kind of walk down the street and we see problems that can be solved.
Yep.
And you started a media company a couple of years back, which was designed to sort of like go back to your roots to a certain extent. But but more interesting to me is there's a new venture that you're, I mean, literally launching pretty much as we record this, that's based on this journey that you've taken. That's kind of fascinating to me.
Yeah. It's because it's so personal. It's based on my health. Yeah. I'm getting back into the health space and it feels amazing. And I'm calling the company Rewind because we're rewinding the clock. We're turning it back. And yeah, it was all based on the idea of winning the morning. And I created this bar to solve a problem for myself. It's like, I want to have a good bar that has the greens and the fruits and the veggies and the protein and the fiber. And it's gluten-free and vegetarian and vegan and no added dairy. So there wasn't one that existed. I just knew there wasn't one that kind of could do everything. And that was where the idea, I'm like, why don't I just create it myself? And it lit me up in a feeling that I have not had in like 20 years. This, almost since I started my first sports training business online, it was like that feeling of, this is what I'm meant to do at this time. And it's taken me this many years to do it. And even the name Rewind is kind of going back, like kind of, you know, turning back the clock and starting over and getting a redo.
It's funny, like you guys can't see this listening, but Ryan's body language just sort of like changed dramatically as you start talking about that. I mean, it's interesting also because this is, it feels like one of these things where it started out because you had a personal need.
Mm-hmm.
And you tried everything out there that was sort of like being offered and you're like, okay, so you know, I can kind of piece together what I need.
Right.
But wouldn't it be cool if there was actually something that I could literally like tear open a wrapper and just like jam on it in the morning.
Right.
And then knowing that there are a whole bunch of people who are sort of like in the middle years of their lives and waking up with, you're not the only one who's got, you know, who had achy joints or autoimmune conditions or inflammation in their body.
Right.
I mean, and the idea of starting a company that creates things that are first solve your own problem, but then is genuinely of service.
Right.
Like is creating things that genuinely are designed to go out there and help people feel better.
And I feel like I'm on this high and it's just infectious. Like I'm shouting from the rooftops and I always say to people, like, I hope I don't sound preachy, but I get so excited, especially if I'm talking to, if I'm speaking to other entrepreneurs, like when you really tap into that, like not just saying you're tapping into, but really tapping into that and building it around a service, because it really is about serving others. Like if you come from that place, it's really hard to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously you have to be strategic. You have to know what you're doing. You have to, you know.
I mean, it's interesting to be sitting down with you now, you know, because you're literally on the verge of launching this new company, launching something really big and cool. What scares you about it?
You know, that's a great question. And for some reason, I don't know why. I don't know if it's because working all those years at the hospital and seeing so many people's lives cut short and working at the school and knowing kids that were shot and killed and, you know, those kids in South Bronx, every day they would leave their apartment. They didn't know if they're going to get jumped. They would take weapons. Like, that's fear. I'm not scared. Like, I'm really, what's the worst that happens? So I'm not going to risk everything. I'm not going to risk my entire life savings and my family's future. I'm going to put some money in that I know I could afford to lose if it doesn't work. And I'm giving it a shot, man. I'm going to go down swinging. So I'm not scared. I'm just leaning into it, man. I look forward to a challenge. Maybe because I'm from New York, I'm a little scrappy. Mm-hmm. I like to cause a ruckus. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm going to give it everything I got. There's no, you know, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but I'm not scared.
Mm. Feels like a good place for us to come full circle. So as we hang out here, name of this is Good Life Project. So if yes. I offer up this phrase, to live a good life, what comes up?
To live a good life is doing what you love. And just waking up every day with a smile. I mean, for me, living a good life is my favorite thing in the world is at night being able to, you know, after the kids have eaten, done all their homework, laying on the couch with them, watching some TV, eating some popcorn. If I could, the more I can do that, the better life I got. So that's a good life for me.
Mm, thank you.
Thanks, my friend.
So if you're still listening, thank you, thank you, thank you. I just completely love that you enjoyed this episode so much that you've listened until now. You're an awesome human being. And while we're wrapping things up, might as well share a quick shout out to our super cool brand partners. If you love the show, and I'm guessing you do because you're still here, please support them. They help make the podcast possible. Check out the links in today's show notes. And don't forget also your spot at this year's Camp GLP. As we recently announced, this will be our final year. We're expecting about 400 amazing humans from all around the world. It's going to be more epic than ever. And if you've been waiting, be sure to register soon. You can find that link at goodlifeproject.com/camp today, or just click the link in the show notes. See you next week.